Hey friends, we are back. It is still .NET Conf. Sorry we were a little bit late there. Had a little technical issues with a couple of cables and some confusion. My bad. But we're good and we're here with Shane Boyer. How's it going, Shane?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay. I understand that you are. You look either tired or possibly on fire. What's going on over there?
Little AC issue in Florida.
You're in Florida and you have no AC.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, I want to say, though, that we, the community, appreciate your sacrifice coming to us straight from Hades. Shane is going to present to us. Now, you're presenting exposing your business services to the web and mobile.
Yeah, it's a real problem. Talking about services that exist within your business and the good old boss man coming to you and saying that he wants to put these things out on the web and talking about the challenges around that. So we'll talk about what that looks like and the challenges around that when it comes to .NET Core.
All right, take it away. I'm gonna switch over to your slides right now.
Okay, awesome. All right, so like Scott said, we'll talk about exposing your business services to the web and mobile. I've given this talk a couple of times in varying degrees at a couple of conferences, and it always seems to be a really good topic whenever a new technology comes out. It seems appropriate in this time because .NET Core is out, ASP.NET Core is new, and I realize that I think the number we'd like to use is about 1% of us attend a conference at least one time a year. I think that's the number, Scott, we use. And the nicety of us being able to go back to the real world and kind of take that packaging off, that new toy we just learned about, spin up a new project, and see how we can take that Hello World project we just learned about and say, hey, boss man, we want to use this new technology.
Are your slides moving there, buddy?
No, I'm just talking about the first one here.
All right, just keep moving your mouse so we know you're alive. Sorry.
All right, I'm alive. We're just passed out from the heat.
Yeah. All right, thanks, buddy.
So I think it's appropriate. I know it's happened to at least within the businesses and companies that I've been around in the last few years. I think when Node.js came out, I can speak to that. I can speak to when Angular was presented. When .NET was first come out, I know I was the guy that came back and said, hey, we've got to use this in a company. So if you didn't see a guy in your company or girl in your company that was saying that, look in the mirror because it was probably you. But trying to get that new technology to work with the existing software has always been the challenge, right? Moving the slide here. I like to call this the shiny penny syndrome. Some of you have heard this. The boss will tell you, hey, this is great. It sounds great. Is it expensive? How do we get it to work with our existing stuff? We've got some great services. They're keeping our business afloat. And you want to bring in this new stuff. It's in beta or it's in, you know, RTM or RC or whatever the acronym is that we're using now to describe these services. And how am I going to make it talk to my existing stuff? How does that happen for us? So that's always a big challenge. And I like to take a look at .NET Core and how do I get this to leverage our existing services. So I say in the last 3 to 5 years, the advent of mobilizing businesses has been a pretty big focus and the ask of many business leaders and their IT staff and the supporting consultants is to reuse these services to make that task happen. So how do we pick up these shiny pennies and understand it? How do we make them apply without getting distracted? I think a lot of times we say, hey, I've picked up this, I've picked up that. We have to use all these technologies and we get distracted and we're not keeping keeping the lights on. So how do we do that? Are your current services mobile or web ready. This is not a picture of my desk, but it most certainly could be. I think there's probably, you know, half of these that I have in my desk drawer or I currently carry with me in some way, shape, or form. I think there's a lot of services in the businesses that I'm in now that I could not connect to or could not support an application if I were to sit down and write an iOS app or an application for, an iPad or even a modern day web application. I couldn't talk to some of the services that are out there. There's a lot of these hardened services and applications that are out there that I couldn't even talk to because of they're just not ready to be talking HTTP. They're built on, you know, they're an AS400. They might be a SOAP service or Java service that just doesn't talk the modern day HTTP languages that we need in order to expose that. So how do we get to get that? So what do we know about these existing systems? Right. So these backend systems, systems of record are often very complex and they're stable. They've been hardened over time. I hope that none of us work in a business right now that has a system that's in this picture. If you do, then maybe it's time to move on. They're running key aspects of our business. They're based on legacy technologies, like I mentioned, and they're not always easy to expose to web standards like HTTP. These systems can also have complex interdependencies that are slowly changing. I mentioned AS400. I've been in a couple of companies over the last 5 or 7 years that still run AS400s because they're solid and they run and they're reliable. They may be expensive to maintain, but they're rocks, right? They keep our big financial systems running. So there's really no need for us to make a change other than to say we've made a change or we want a newer system. The problem with these is that there's a quick need for a lot of mobile developers to be able to attach to these systems, expose the data that is there. So the problem is not creating an API for just one of these big systems, but for all of the systems that support the system, the inside applications. There's many desktop applications, green screens that all of these apps currently use to support the inner business. So how do we build something right now that will allow us to get at these underlying systems, get it out to our mobile sales force, our mobile customers, and get them out their data and do some self-service? So how do we build those APIs that allow us to get to that? Here's kind of a picture of a typical business system. There's, again, multiple systems of records. There's variations of technologies. Some of these are vendor-based solutions. I'll throw a name out there. Something like SAP might be in the back end. Other varying HR systems. We've got variations of databases back there. Content management systems for assets. RSS might not be something back there, but you may have some internal blogs or internal news readers. There's things like Yammer for your business. You might want to expose that. NoSQL, and then of course there's some SOAP services out there too that might be available. I want to focus a little bit on WCF. WCF was it's a framework. I think a lot of us as .NET developers became to either love or hate. And I kind of put this in a black and white slide. SOAP may have been a good or bad word for you. XML was supposed to kind of save the world as far as data exchange was concerned. There's our wonderful web config that held all of our transports and our configurations. And I don't know if any of you have gone through the pain of fat fingering a configuration in a web.config and spent hours trying to figure out what you did, and then finally just did an add service reference to redo it again. But there's some pain associated sometimes with doing WCF development. Obviously, there was the WS star for security. It had transactions, reliable messages, but it was built, to support Silverlight, WPF applications, and was the basis initially. It's where Web API came from, and so WCF REST is where Web API came from. The primary protocol was SOAP, and of course the message format was XML. There was a lot of other great features, like I mentioned, with the WS star for security, envelopes, the reliable messages. And it was, for a lot of businesses, it's where the whole SOA movement, at least from my experience, that's where a lot of the SOA stuff for .NET came from. Is everybody's like, we wanted the service-oriented architecture. Let's build another WCF service. Services, where a lot of stuff came from. A lot of these services, however, were about getting large data sets out of these back-end systems and getting them down to the desktop. The desktop was where the power was. So building a WCF service over to get data out of a SQL server or maybe an Oracle database, or building it over top of some back-end SAP system, and these large object graphs that were coming back in large data sets really didn't matter, because it was all internal and we're using the power of the desktop to crunch through this data and present it in a web form, a desktop form, or Silverlight or WPF. So it really didn't matter. Then when the web and the web movement and the mobile movement hit, trying to do that same type of work became a challenge, quite honestly. That's you're sending a 10 to 15 meg packet across the web. I don't know if any of you try to process a packet that size on a phone. You can literally feel, at least in an Android phone, burning in your hand trying to process an XML data packet of 5 megs or more. It literally will get hot. And parsing an XML data file is really not as fun to do, even in native code, on any of the platforms right now. So what's the architectural approach for doing this? And it may come off as obvious, but you'd be surprised. It's really not as obvious as you think. An API facade pattern, or I like to call it aggregation layer. Facade sounds a little too fancy. Is building something above these layers to insulate yourself from these back ends. Using Web API would be a perfect choice. You can even do it in Node. I've done it in Node as well, depending on your skill set. But being as this is .NET Conf, let's talk Web API. Let's talk .NET Core and what it looks like to do that. The point here is that we're going to be talking to these back-end WCF services via SOAP. So we'll use our Web API layer to talk to the big systems, the CMS systems, NoSQL, et cetera, talk their languages, do the processes, thin out those back-end messages in order to get what we need in order to present to the layers in the front. So we might be getting those 10 meg layers, those 10 meg packet sizes, those large packet sizes, only getting what we need for the view, and then sending back the JSON in order to go to either the web views or to the mobile views. Again, only getting what we need. So this is what it would look like a little bit from multiple systems coming back. This is a pretty good representation of something I've had to do in the past, where we've got a customers, an inventory, and an accounting system, where quite literally we're getting somewhere between 10 and 15 megs worth of data, but the JSON that I had to represent on an actual web view, I only need a summary of a list. So what's a first name, last name, and maybe a zip code in order to present. And then they would go into a details within the web view itself. So you can see how just going through and using the .NET Core layer to call the backend, using the TPL, the parallel library, in order to make these calls to the backend in parallel when they're all done, reducing the actual call themselves, and then presenting that JSON document back to the front end. One of the other advantages to doing this is within the Web API layer, you can add in things like a caching layer and other assets to reduce the multiple calls or additional calls to the backend services so that you don't have to continually make those calls. One other additional feature is it does also insulate any changes downstream to these backend services. If your business decides it would like to swap out these back-end systems, an accounting system, if it changes, it does insulate your front-end applications from those changes as well, where the vendor system, for instance, the accounting system, if they change from system A to system B, The only thing that has to change at this point is the interface between the web API layer and the vendor system itself, and not having to necessarily push out another release of your front-end application, unless, of course, you're adding features. Again, allowing for the installation. So that would be additional features as well. One other thing I want to point out is from an API design too, is just the size of the data coming back. Now, I've got one little caveat. This was true in Web API 2, and I'm going to file a bug we'll talk about here in a second. So here's a simple data example of kind of a person, first, last, vehicle, etc. on my left, an XML, and it's about 465K. That same exact data representation without removing anything in JSON is about a little less than half the size. So when you're talking about building APIs for customers or for your mobilized sales units, etc., for your employees, you have to be conscious of the amount of data you're sending down the front, not only for performance perspective too, but a lot of this BYOD mentality that still exists, it's still a very relevant term. I'm responsible for my own cell phone bill. I'm responsible for my own data plan. If I'm using your application or even my company's application, I might have a problem if I'm only using your application to do my job and I realize that my data plan is kind of going a little bit nuts. So be conscious of the amount of data you're pushing forward to support your application. This let me get it all up front and then allow the device to decide what to show when it needs it might not be the best result depending on the size of data that you're showing through. So having that aggregation layer or that API layer there and only kind of getting what you need, this is a perfect place for you to be able to do that too, in conjunction with things like caching, et cetera, to be able to put that in place. The bug I want to point out that I've discovered is, at least with .NET Core, this is not true. So I don't know if this is something we need to dig into further. So XML is actually smaller than it is in .NET Core. So just a little side note. So what does this look like in .NET Core? How do we talk to these existing services? Do we have the add service reference? Do we use this SVC util in a command line in order to generate these proxies? Previously in 4.x, there was in Visual Studio, we had a kind of right click in a web application and do an add service reference, and it would generate these nice little proxies for us and have a nice IntelliSense, things like that, in order to talk to our WCF services. So let's look what that see what that looks like in .NET Core. Luckily for us, the .NET team, the CoreFX team, has created a WCF connected service for .NET Core, which gives us that same functionality. It's available in the gallery. It's called WCF connected service for .NET Core, which allows us to add a WCF service reference, and basically works exactly the same way. This currently is only available for Visual Studio. However, I have filed an issue with the .NET team because it appears as if it generates a .NET command to see if we can make this cross-platform. All right, so let's see what that looks like in Visual Studio. And I can't see any questions. So Scott, do we have any questions right now? Do we have any questions at the moment? I can't see the question board.
I'm not seeing any questions right now. Can you guys check Twitter for the question? Oh, here we go. There. They just refreshed it here.
Great.
So Paolo is asking, as ASP.NET Core will be RTM soon, but is currently in RC, do you trust it and do you recommend it?
I've been using .NET Core since beta 3.
Seriously?
Yeah. Not in production, but I've been doing a lot more than just Hello Web. I've been building pretty decent, at least API stuff right now. I find that there's been more changes in kind of the tag helpers and front end pieces. And other than minor API changes, I find it to be pretty solid, and the performance for me has been quite good. As a side note, I'll say that other than the last 2 days, probably 95% of my core development has been on OS X. I have not been doing it on Windows. So if that's there any further comfort from a cross-platform perspective.
And you don't feel like a second-class citizen?
No, not at all, especially with VS Code and OmniSharp. And I've been for a while from probably beta 3 to, I guess, beta 7. Mm-hmm. I was working and doing one of my previous .NET Conf presentations was on the Yeoman generators. So that's kind of where I find it to keep up to date with what's going on with the templates and stuff. I find that to make it more mm-hmm. of a first class citizen on those platforms.
And are you finding that you have to go into Visual Studio and like do something and then jump out ever? Or like do you ever have to like run over to
this
a Windows
machine? This is the only situation.
And... Say it again?
This is the only situation I've had to find where I found like somebody asked me a question, how do I talk to a WCF service, and that kind of was the premise for this discussion.
Okay.
This was a long fight to make this happen. So funny story about that.
Cool. So you're going to dive into the demo now.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. I'm going to put you back full screen. There you go.
Cool. All right. So I've got a quick web API project. Let that fire up here. Let's see, Solution Explorer. So this is a very simple, just file new project, ASP.NET Core, web API project. All I did in this instance was change values controller to person controller. So that's the extent of the changes that I've made thus far to do this. I do have an existing WCF service that I wrote strictly for demo purposes. I have it published on Azure right now. It's a people service, and it just generates a random number of people with extensive amount of data. And then there's also an address service as well. So that's what we'll be talking to. So if you've done any WCF development in the past, you're probably pretty used to seeing the screen, and you're either comfortable with it or it gives you the shakes, depending on what you're used to here. If you look at the WSDL, again, pretty straightforward, nice SOAP service, gives you all the contracts and data objects you're going to need. This is the blog entry that I mentioned that talks about the connected service. And then I've already downloaded the connected service add-in. So we're going to go ahead and add a reference to our people service. And it's very simple and similar to add service reference before. So after you add in the v6 for this, we're just going to say add and then connected service. And you see in the bottom, we've got a WCF service preview, and we hit configure. We're going to plug in our address, and we'll just make this web application.
Good typing.
You like that?
It's very nice. I always tell people that when you're giving a presentation and you're doing live coding, that you know it's really easy. Like I type like 100 words a minute when I'm alone in a room, but if anybody is looking, it drops down to one.
Yeah. Flub every letter. So again, this is the dialogues are exactly as add service reference. If you've done any .NET development and doing add service reference, this should not be very scary or different from what you're used to seeing before. Mm-hmm. I just accept the defaults. I want to see my access level for the generated classes to be public.
Mm-hmm. Would this work with WCF Discovery Service?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
I haven't tried it. It should not be different.
And are you using anything like WS Security or SOAP 1.1 or 1.2 rather?
No.
So do we know how far this would go?
I haven't tested, but I know, and that's awesome that it did that.
It looks like it's trying to check out a file from your source control.
Yeah, that's awesome. So let's...
What's your source control?
Just Git.
Something read-only?
Shouldn't be at all. But when in doubt...
Mm-hmm.
I should talk to Andrea about that. What's going on?
Is there a GitHub? If only we had the people from GitHub for Visual Studio on the line. So what file's it upset about?
I'm not sure. It's probably a solution file.
It couldn't check something out, it said.
Yeah, Solution Explorer, Team Explorer. I just want to check everything out, man.
I did not see the error message clearly. Did you?
No, I didn't. Yeah.
Maybe we should see that and start there.
So source control. Add. Connect the service again.
All right.
Let's pull that down. People. Okay. Go with reference one.
So this is scaffolding. So it's going and it's introspecting on that WSDL and generating. And where is it going to put the results?
It's going to add it into, they'll see a service references like we've used to seeing before.
Okay, here we go. Hang on.
Able to check out the file.
Project.json.
Awesome. Oh, it's got to add all the NuGet packages to it. That's why.
Is that by any chance read-only on disk?
I don't like you. Stop that. Let's do this. We need to do...
You should use that. I should get you to use the Quake mode stuff that Mads made. You remember that?
Yeah.
Open console anywhere. All right, and is the file read-only? If you did, I'm just curious. I don't want me to mess up your presentation, but if you did like a trib on Project JSON. Nope.
Says A. Yeah.
All right. Okay. That's an interesting one, though. You've never seen this before?
So no.
What's happening, and this is me guessing, and you can tell me if we're right here, is that the plugin, which is a preview plugin for doing WCF, is trying to make a change to a file, and is finding that it's being denied doing that. But with the error message, may not necessarily be 100% clear. It might be doing it because something else upstream has failed. So is it calling the WSDL.exe stuff here, or the original generator?
Yeah, it calls the WSDL, generates the proxy, and then it's also going to add the NuGet references. So what we'll do here...
Maybe you could remove Git temporarily, just yank the Git bindings entirely. I'm just trying to unblock you. I mean, it's up to you how you want to solve the problem, but depending on how badly you care about that, if you just torch .git folder and then reopen the project without bindings, then theoretically it would not be trying to check anything out.
I do have a backup, so... I'm trying to be a good citizen. I was trying to put it in GitHub.
You can put it in GitHub. I just maybe just move the .git, all of that away.
So how far do I have to go to see that?
Where does your git.git start? /A. There's your top level folder. So if you torched that and then closed VS and torched that, you're going to want to /s.git. I think we're Mac people, aren't we? Or Linux people.
I am.
RD. Yeah, it's RD.
Is it DL?
I think it's RD. RD.git/s. Someone's talking in my ear. What did you say, person in my ear? No, we know it is a project.json problem. /s. RD.git/s.
Gotcha.
Yeah. People are complimenting you on your calm demeanor.
On my calm demeanor?
Even though it's 130 degrees in your room right now. And go ahead and run VS again there. And everyone on Twitter is trying to help. It's in Project JSON.
Yeah, I know it's Project JSON.
We know that part.
If I didn't care about my source code, I wouldn't have it connected to Git.
So the thing is, you know, it's trying to generate some files and then add those into the project. And Paolo is saying that maybe it's with temp files that got generated. We'll find out in a second.
I'll show you what it's going to add.
We want to point out this is a preview of the, not of the Visual, none of the .NET stuff, but rather of the WCF connected service. It is a preview.
Correct.
So go ahead and try that again. Might want to close the project, Jason, while we're doing it, just for safety's sake.
You don't want to play with fire?
And I'm going to step out because my doctor is calling, so I'll be right back.
All right, you step out. All right, cool. All right, so we're going to add this again. If it fails, we'll open up my backup. Cool. Configure. Let's go ahead and add people service again. And I need to add this because I like this in this way. I need that for a reason. So now we're waiting for this to scaffold, create our files, download our NuGet. I do want to see a little bit more in this output file. So there we go. So then it updates and gives us that blog, like, thank you. Here's our ad for this thing again. Cool. All right, so if I go over to Project JSON, there's a couple of things that it does add. Go away there. So the things that it will add here is the system.service model items, the library, so duplex, HTTP, NetTCP, primitives, and security. So these are the new pieces that come from the .NET WCF libraries that must be added. And that's what the add-in will put into Project JSON for you, which is nice and awesome. Right, so we do appreciate that. A little auto action for us. Let's find out why this guy keeps popping up. We don't care. Thanks. Go away. All right. So now that we have that in there, we can go ahead and start doing some real work. All right. So we've been adding our service model items. We've got our API get person. If I ran this now, I think we'd all the expectation would be that person one, person two would come back. So what I want to be able to do now is go ahead and add in and be able to get back our person items. So if I go and look at what's generated, if I go over to reference.cs, again, this should be very familiar if you're used to seeing those proxies that got generated. If anybody was brave enough to go look at them in the past, there was quite a bit more in here than what gets generated by this here. Just a little side note, this .NET-service util is a little hint to me that I think there's gonna be a cross-platform tool for it. I have asked the engineers on the team, the .NET team, to see if that's possible, because I would really like to use this on Linux to do the same thing. So that would be great. So you can see that we have our classes as expected. We've got our person class, our first, our properties, and all that. But what I'm most concerned about is our client. It does generate our get people service client, which I'm going to use to call from the service here and thin some things out. Now, just to get an idea, I don't know if anybody's familiar with this little icon here, or this tool here. This is the WCF test client. It still does exist on Windows 10. Just do a really long and tiresome search for it using Explorer and you will find it. What I'm gonna actually do is call get people complete is the method I'm gonna call. It takes a number of people, like how many people do I want? I'll ask for 75, and that does invoke the web service and gives us back this lovely XML. Now, this is the XML I talked about before that we don't want to send back to our web or even our mobile client, right? And this is something similar that you would probably see from those back-end services with those wonderful name columns, and I apologize if I offend any data architects in the past, but item phone number data 2 is not a really good column name or property name to be sending back. So I want to make sure I don't send stuff like that back. And that's that aggregation piece that I'm talking about making different in our aggregation layer and our API layer. All right. So let's quit time check here. 146. Okay, so how do we get this in here? So the first thing I want to do, let's just go ahead and change this first thing here. And I'm going to change this to a task because I want to use async, right? So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to get some people back. So we're going to do task. We'll do IEnumerable. There's that, those typing skills again. And we're going to get person major back. Person major is those people that data type that's coming back from the WCF service. Okay, so we'll just comment this guy out for now. Now, if you've done WCF development in the past, you'd be familiar with bindings, and those bindings would typically, when you did add service reference, it would create those TCP bindings, those HTTP bindings, and transports, and all those nice definitions in the web config. And you don't have that defined. It doesn't do that for you. So what you have to do in .NET Core is define those bindings yourself. So the first thing I'm going to do is create a binding, and that is going to be simple, of basic HTTP binding. Basic HTTP binding is going to take a security mode. Again, if anybody who's done WCF in the past, you'll know that there's a basic HTTP binding, there's TCP binding, and each of those has a security type. And I'll be honest, most of the security types are going to either be transport, which means whatever TCP connection you're using is usually going to be SSL, or if you're going to go crazy and do the WS star stuff, that's going to be beyond this talk, and we're going to have to look into that. I haven't done that kind of depth right now on this particular library to see if it even supports. So I'm going to assume that it does, but I haven't done any sure tests yet. So do none, and that should be in our TCP service model, yes. There we go, wait for that to resolve. And then next, we're going to just say, make our client. We want to get people service client. We're going to pass in our binding. And then the next thing we need to pass in is the actual address that we're going to be hitting. Obviously, you can keep these in your configuration file, constants, etc. And let's go ahead and get our endpoint address. Make sure we get a code in here correctly. This needs to be this. This is expected. What am I missing here? Okay, people service client. Okay, type. There we go. All right, so now that we have those guys, we can call our get people async count and return our people, right? So I'm going to pass in count of, let's say, 75 people. We'll thin this up, and let's just take out, we'll take out the TPL for now, just for time's sakes. This is going to be dot result. Person major array. All right, so at this point, we've created a binding of a basic HTTP, a binding. We've created a new service client, the WCF client, passed in the binding type and the address itself. And then also, we're going to call the get people async with 75 people, which is just a parameter. One thing to point out is that the connected service v6 here only generates the async methods. It does not generate synchronous methods. I do have a blog entry that I created prior to this being available, where you can actually use the SVC util to generate these proxies, which will give you both synchronous and asynchronous. However, I don't know why you would want to do synchronous services, given where we're at now in the platform. So let's look at this. Let's go ahead and run it. I'm going to run it without without debugging. Living on the edge. We have some build errors. It doesn't like me. What did I miss? We missed a parentheses. All right. Build succeeded. It's going to call WCF servers on Azure. It should just give us back everything we've asked for in the past. So there's all the data. We hit a WCF service. Basically, it was two lines of code that I had to write, maybe four lines of code that I had to write in order to get the service back. Now, one of my favorite tools still to this day is Fiddler. It's free. Go away. And what this will do, if I hit refresh, we can actually see the call to the service here. It calls a WCF service and shows the size, and it shows the API size. Again, my note that I said earlier in the talk here was that the API should be smaller, but in this particular case, it's not. Let me bring up a full example here. Oh, maybe that's not it. Maybe it's web application one, where we're hitting both the services and doing a thinning out of everything. Promise it's an SSD. Okay. So what we've done with this particular one, it's loading up the Xproj, is hitting both the person service as well as the address service using a parallel call, and then when they're both completing, putting back together those results. There we go. So we've got a person control, same person controller. We have, go on, respond, thank you. All right, so we've got our basic HTTP binding, like we just coded up. We're calling get people async. Then we've got the get addresses. So this is calling just a different endpoint here, also getting 75 addresses there. So imagine in the example I showed where we're hitting multiple backends. So in this method here, mashup, we're getting some peeps, and we're getting some addresses, And then when both of those are contained, when they're both can finish at this point, we're going to return the combination of the two, and we're going to return just a small version of them. So we're only getting the first, the last, and the zip code in order to present in this particular example, maybe just what we need for a particular screen. This is all using the parallel calls to the back ends, the two services, and then using an async, the async await classes, calls, excuse me, of the TPL in order to do that. So if we run this in without debug mode, let me see, start without debugging, and I pull up Fiddler, and let's move all those. You can see that the initial call came into the API. We've got the two calls went parallel and came back. So we had 1700 and 8300. And then we have just the thinned out portion, only what we need of 3700. And that's how we would get just what we need by leveraging the API and the aggregation layer for what we need at this point.
That's awesome, Shane. This is Seth. I've been watching in the background. This is pretty cool how you were able to sort of just front end the new stuff and then call the older stuff and all make it seamless. I think that's super neat.
Yeah. So just wrapping up real quick, if there's no questions, I've got a couple of links here that I've listed here. We do have a Slack channel that I started. We've got about 1,800 people. The .NET team is participating there. So if you guys have questions about this or other stuff that's going on, please join there. The people service I'm using is on my GitHub page. And then also the team that's building this add-in service, they're talking about this. They have their own repo. It's the github.com/.NET/WCF. And that's where they're building all the WCF client stuff. It is open source. They're actively doing this, and they're very responsive when you've got issues. So I would encourage, if you guys are doing WCF development and want it in the new core stuff, to participate there. And feel free to reach out to me on anything I've got listed here.
Awesome. Well, Shane, this has been perfect. I love powering through some code with a really awesome dev like Shane. I hope you have enjoyed it too. Coming around in just a bit, we have Jasmine Greenway with a lap around octokit.next. So we're going to cut to that just after the break. Thanks for watching.